We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, verses 24 to 44. Verse 24. Achapyataharanti mam itihasam paratanam avatu tasasam varam yador amitatejasam. Translation. In this regard, sages cite a historical narration concerning the conversation between the greatly powerful King Yadu and an Avaduta. Mukamakaroti vakshavam bangam langayate giriyakritam paman bande shi guru minatarinam. Om agyana tinarandasya gyananjara shudakaya chakshimiritam yena tasame shi dhanavine. So what do you remember from the last class? Parvati?
We have another instance where we have pure devotee who's got Krishna as the perfect master.
Right.
And we're left with him.
Okay.
Another alternative.
Good. We have another example of a devotee who has Krishna as spiritual master, and we're given another alternative. Yes?
Very dear to Krishna.
Very dear to Krishna. Okay. So let's go on with today's verses. Now we're going to hear a story from Lord Krishna about the Avaduta, conversation between King Yadu and Avaduta. Purport, Lord Krishna will narrate this story to show Uddhava how rational intelligence can be utilized in bhakti yoga to acquire Vedic knowledge. Number one. So first thing, purpose of the story is to show how you can use your intelligence in bhakti yoga. And second, how ultimately an intelligent person will come to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in our search for Krishna, the 24 gurus are going to help us find Krishna. 25. Maharaj Yadu once observed a certain brahmana of Avaduta, who appeared to be quite young and learned, wandering about fearlessly. Being himself most learned in spiritual science, the king took the opportunity and inquired from him as follows. 26. Sri Yadu said, O Brahmana, I see you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, yet you have acquired a most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence, and why are you traveling freely throughout the world, behaving as if you were a child? So, the problem here, he's calling him Brahman. So you're a Brahman, but you're not following your Varnasham duties as a Brahman. You're not doing yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dan, what is it, pratigraha? Yes. Six duties of a Brahman. You're just wandering about like a child and you've given up your brahminical duties. So, but still, it seems like you are very learned and you have understood people. So please, how did you get this intelligence? Verse 27, generally human beings work hard to cultivate religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and also knowledge of the soul, and their usual motive is to increase the duration of their lives, acquire fame, and enjoy material opulence. So we'll go to the purport about the middle. Most common people think, for example, that the yoga system is meant for improving one's health, that one may pray to God for money, and that one's spiritual knowledge is meant for increasing one's prestige in society. Maharaj Yadu wants to clarify that the young Brahmana of Avaduta is not like ordinary persons, and he's actually on a spiritual platform, as will be explained in the following verses.
What sages are these?
Sages?
Yes, no, we started off.
No.
Sages died in historical marriage.
Oh, what sages? Doesn't say. Doesn't say what sages.
No,
Krishna is quoting some sages, but it doesn't mention their names. Krishna is speaking and he's quoting a story from some sages, but it doesn't say who they are. Verse 28. You, however, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened as if you were a ghostly creature. So, in the purport, first paragraph, ignorant persons often think, renounced spiritual life is meant for those who are impotent or homely or incompetent in practical worldly affairs. Yes, he's ugly. He can't have children. He can't make money. That's why he's renounced. That's why he's a devotee, because otherwise nobody would marry him. And he's so ugly, and he doesn't know how to make money, so therefore he became a devotee. Wrong. Sometimes foolish people say that religious life is a crutch for those who are not expert enough to achieve a high status in society. Therefore, King Yadu has described the qualities of the mendicant Brahmana in order to show that the Brahmana has taken to renounce spiritual life in spite of great potential for worldly success. The Avadutta Brahmana is described as being expert, learned, good-looking, eloquent, and in every sense qualified to be a great material success. Still, the Avadutta has renounced material life and taken to Krishna consciousness. Going back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge is the real work of a human being. Back to one of our themes. Verse 29. Although all people within the material world are burning in the great forest fire of lust and greed, you remain free and are not burned by that fire. You are just like an elephant who takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganga River. So, paragraph 2 of the purport. Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that within the Ganga flows great currents of water capable of extinguishing a blazing fire, especially if you go up to Haridwar, and up there it's freezing, very cold water, and very fast, also very strong current. If an elephant maddened by sex desire stands within the Ganga, its powerful cooling currents extinguish his lust and the elephant becomes pacified. Similarly, ordinary human beings trapped in the cycle of birth and death are constantly harassed by the enemies of lust and greed, which never allow the mind to be completely peaceful. But if, following the example of the elephant, one situates oneself within the cooling waves of transcendental bliss, then all material desire will soon be extinguished. One will become shanta, or peaceful. It's described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna bhakta nishkamata ev shanta. Thus everyone should take to the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and cleanse himself in the cooling waters of Krishna consciousness, our real eternal consciousness. Verse 30. O Brahmana, we see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment and that you are traveling alone without any companions or family members. Therefore, because we are sincerely inquiring from you, please tell us the cause of the great ecstasy that you are feeling within yourself. Purport. The word kevalatmana is significant here. Unless one has practical realization of the Supreme Soul and individual soul, who reside together within the heart of every living being, it is very difficult to artificially adopt a sannyas order of life and travel without the association of wife, children, or other family members. Because he's not alone. That's why he's traveling. He's able to travel alone, because he has Krishna. The nature of every living being is to make friends with others and to offer his love to a suitable person. One who has realized the Supreme Person is satisfied to always carry the personality of Godhead within his heart as his constant companion. Unless one has realized that Krishna is one's only true friend and that Krishna is within one's heart, one will remain attached to the temporary relationships of the material world. Verse 31, where Krishna continued. The intelligent King Yadu, always respectful to the Brahmanas, waited with bowed head as the Brahmana, pleased with the king's attitude, began to reply. The Brahmana said, text 32, My dear king, with my intelligence I have taken shelter of many spiritual masters. Having gained transcendental understanding from them, I now wander about the earth in a liberated condition. Please listen as I describe them to you. So we'll go to the middle of this purport. In reply to the king, the saintly Brahmana states, I do not consider the 24 elements of the physical world as objects of my sense gratification. Therefore, I don't consider accepting or rejecting them. Rather, I accept the material elements as my instructing spiritual masters. So this is the point that he sees they are not for me. They are not for my sense gratification. They are my gurus. So I learn from them. It's quite a different way of looking at the world. Everything is your guru. Thus, even though wandering throughout the material world, I am never bereft of service to the guru. Taking shelter of steady intelligence, I travel about the earth, constantly engaged on the transcendental platform. By intelligence, I transcend useless desires, and my ultimate goal is the loving devotional service of the Lord. Now I shall explain to you about my 24 spiritual masters. So we will read what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. O King, I have many spiritual masters who I chose with the help of my intelligence. Although I did not formally receive instructions from them, I've accumulated much knowledge by observing them with the help of my intelligence. So he's telling his relationship between these gurus and him. Vishwanath is explaining what is his relationship. With the help of my intelligence, I didn't get instructions, but I got knowledge. In this way, I've become free from the miseries of material existence, and I'm wandering about freely in this world. Now, let me tell you the names of these spiritual masters. 33 to 35. O King, I've taken shelter of 24 gurus who are the following: the earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon, and python, the sea, moth, honeybee, elephant, and honey thief, the deer, the fish, the prostitute pingala, the kurara bird, and the child, and the young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, and wasp. My dear King, by studying their activities, I have learned the science of the self. So you have this flip chart. You can also follow along. Now, one is missing somehow, the elephant. So you can add the elephant in there on your list of this flip chart. It will be between... didn't you get it, Parvati? I have seven, chapter seven. Okay, you can give one. Wait, I'll give one to Parvati too. Yeah, so she's giving you the chart. Yeah, so you can follow. It looks like it's between the two B's is the elephant. So you can... Between the two B's? Between the honeybee... On this chart we have two B's. Yeah, the honeybee and the greedy bee. Yeah, 13 and 14 is the elephant. So verse 13 to 14 is the elephant, and he's captured by touch. So touch is the lesson of that, of the elephant. And we will discuss him on Monday. That will be it for Monday's class. Okay. So here we start with our gurus, verse 36. Please listen, O son of Maharaj Yayati, O tiger among men, as I explain to you what I have learned from each of these gurus. 37. A sober person, even when harassed by other living beings, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from progress on his own path. This rule I have learned from the earth. So the earth is the symbol of tolerance and how to be steady and unswerving. These are the lessons we learn from the earth. So, the purport. The earth is a symbol of tolerance. So imagine that you are the earth. Now we will try to put ourselves in the position of the earth and what the earth has to tolerate. By deep oil drilling, atomic explosions, pollution, and so on, the earth is constantly harassed by demoniac living entities. So imagine that the earth is your body. People are drilling into you and taking out your oil or your blood, and they're making explosions on your body. They're polluting everything, your body. And sometimes lush forests are cut down by greedy men with commercial interests, and thus a wasteland is created. So these are the deserts. They create deserts all over, which are patches that are extremely hot. Sometimes the earth's surface is soaked by the blood of soldiers fighting in savage warfare. So then there's wars happening. Yet, despite all these disturbances, the earth continues to provide all necessities of the living beings. In this way, one may learn the art of tolerance by studying the earth. So we learn tolerance, and we learn also all harassing aggressors are helpless tools of God. So you learn to tolerate, and the philosophy behind the tolerance is that, is also explained in the verse, that whoever is giving you trouble is actually are acting helplessly under the control of God, and they are just giving you your karma. So what can you do except tolerate? You have to tolerate. Tams titiksha sabharata. They are instruments of your karma. They are instruments.
They are instruments of my karma. Mm-hmm. They are giving my karma.
Yes, yes.
Delivering.
The reactions. They're the reactions of your karma. Yes, they are giving you. They are the messengers. So that is the earth. And the next verse 38, we have the mountain and the tree. And a saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for his existence. Similarly, as a disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others. So the mountain, selfless service to others, and the tree also. And also, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta will give another in his commentary. See if I have the commentary here. Yes. He gives another thing we learn from the mountain and the tree. Tolerate disturbances from others. It's similar to the earth. In the purport, great mountains bear unlimited quantities of earth. So now you're a mountain, imagine, which in turn gives sustenance to innumerable forms of life, such as trees, grass, birds, animals, and so on. So as a mountain, you help the trees, the grass, the birds, the animals. Mountains also pour forth unlimited quantities of crystalline water in the forms of waterfalls and rivers, and this water gives life to all. So as a mountain, you provide water. By studying the example of mountains, one should learn the art of providing for the happiness of all living entities. So that is the verse in 10th canto. We heard Radharani very much praising Girirash. There's Haridasavarya, the greatest devotee, because he's giving grass for the cows, caves for the devotees, waterfalls, and beautiful seats. He's giving everything to serve all the devotees and all the rasas. Similarly, one may take excellent lessons from the pious trees. So imagine being a tree who offer innumerable benefits, such as fruits, flowers, cooling shade, and medicinal extracts. So while the tree is alive, you're giving fruits, you're giving flowers, shade, medicine. Even when a tree is suddenly cut down and dragged away, the tree does not protest, but continues to give service to others in the form of firewood. So even after the tree dies, it's still serving others with its body. Thus one should become the disciple of such magnanimous trees and learn from them the qualities of saintly conduct. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti says that he's talking about the mountain and the tree, and they also represent the earth. This is the earth element. Not only is earth the earth, but the mountain and tree, they're also representing that element, the earth element. The mountain, and he praises the mountain, how it devotes its efforts for others by holding up the earth, producing waterfalls and giving jewels. Jewels come from the mountains. Devotee should learn this conduct from the mountain. As a disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself completely to others. Now he gives another thing the tree can do that the mountain can't do. One can take the tree from one place to another, plant it, and water it. The tree accepts this and does not protest. The yogi should be like that. This is the particular nature of the tree not seen in the mountain. You can't move the mountain. But the tree, you can move. And from one place.
Where is that from?
A commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti's comment. And I took some verses from 10th canto, 22nd chapter, where Lord Krishna praises the trees. O Stoka Krishna and Amshu, this is 10:22, 31-35. O Shidama, Subal, and Arjuna, O Vrishab, O Jasvi, Devaprastha, and Varutapa, just see these greatly fortunate trees, whose lives are completely dedicated to the benefit of others. Even while tolerating the wind, rain, heat, and snow, They protect us from these elements. So the trees are getting blasted by the rain, the wind, the snow, and but they're still protecting those who go underneath them from all these things, even though they're taking the rain on them, and they're taking the heat, and they're taking the snow on them, and protecting those who take shelter of them. Just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. Isn't that an amazing appreciation of a tree? Whatever you ask from the tree, whatever you want from the tree, you will get. And you don't go away disappointed. Desire tree. These trees fulfill one's desires with their leaves, flowers, and fruits, their shade, roots, bark, and wood, and also with their fragrance, sap, ashes, pulp, and shoots. And the conclusion, Krishna says, Etava janma safayam dehinam ihadehishu pranar artair tihavacha shreya charanam sada. It is the duty of every living entity, every living being, to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. So pranar artar diavacha, pranar means your life. If you can't give your life, then artar, give your wealth. If you have no money, then dia, give your intelligence. And if you have no intelligence, then vacha, speak, give words, Jan Hare Krishna. So we will go to the commentary of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, verse 38. He brings in another point. The mountain is made of stone, but clay is not so hard. That is why the hard mountain can sustain the soft soil, but soft soil cannot sustain the burden of the mountain. The earth has two kinds of ingredients, the hard mountain and the soft clay. Everyone should learn how to perform welfare activities for others from the mountain. The principal characteristic of a saintly person is he's always desires supreme benefit for others. Otherwise, selfish interest captures the living entities and induces them to become envious of others. So what's the supreme characteristic of a saintly person? Desiring the welfare of others. So this is a supreme characteristic. The lesson to be learned from the tree which grows on the earth is to tolerate disturbances caused by others. The non-devotee materialistic enjoyer considers all items of this world to be objects of his enjoyment, but a devotee considers all items as his spiritual masters and learns from them different things. This is the nature of a devotee. Worship of Lord Hari is possible only if one becomes as tolerant as a tree and as immovable and steady as a mountain. So that's a little different from the Trinadapi verse. Steady and immovable like a mountain, tolerant as a tree. Otherwise, an intolerant person can never engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. That is why Sri Gaurasundara has instructed everyone to be as tolerant as a tree in order to chant the holy name of Lord Hari. So verse 39, simple living and high thinking. And this is also about prana. A learned sage should take his satisfaction in simple maintenance of his existence and should not seek satisfaction through gratifying the material senses. In other words, one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed and so that one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-realization. So this is how to be satisfied with whatever is achieved for keeping body and soul together. So this verse and the next verse will be talking about that, to be the satisfaction. Paragraph 1, two lines down. One must properly maintain one's body by regulated activities of eating, sleeping, cleansing, etc. Otherwise, the mind will become weak and one's spiritual knowledge will fade away. If one eats too austerely, or if in the name of selflessness one accepts impure food, surely one loses control of the mind. On the other hand, if one eats food that is excessively fatty or rich, there will be unwanted increase in sleep and semen. Thus the mind and speech will be overwhelmed by the modes of passion and ignorance. Lord Krishna has summarized the whole matter in Bhagavad Gita by his statement, yukta hara viharasya yukta chestasya karmasya. One should moderately and intelligently regulate all of one's bodily activities so they are favorable for self-realization. This technique is taught by the bona fide spiritual master. If one is too austere, or if one engages too much in sense gratification, self-realization is impossible. So this particular principle of regulation will change as you grow older. What you could eat in your youth, you cannot eat when you're old. And it gets less and less. It gets more and more restricted at the older you get. Something you can eat even like 1 month before, you can't eat the next month. Or even 1 week before, the day before, then the next day, that's off your diet now. So what I'm learning from my guru, the intestines, that Lila Darp told me I should listen to my intestines, they are my guru. So I'm learning so much by listening to my intestines. So here we are trying to simple living and high thinking. Let us see, I have something here from Satya Raj on verse 39. So his actual writing is targeted to the non-devotees. So it's interesting how he explains this to them. He says, once you care for the material body and for one's day-to-day life in a secondary way, being mindful that higher knowledge and self-realization come first, our priority should be spiritual life. So that's how he's explaining it to... He's actually writing his book for the non-devotees, so... He's explaining that, you know, you have so many, you think your material body is the most important, but no, the most important is your spiritual life. And here in his purport, he's saying that we, as devotees, we have to be regulated. So it's a little different perception. So we heard about the earth, we heard about the mountain and the tree, we heard we need regulation, and now we will hear about the wind, which is also air. Verse 40. Even a transcendentalist is surrounded by innumerable material objects which possess good and bad qualities. However, one who has transcended material good and evil should not become entangled even when in contact with the material objects. Rather, he should act like the wind. So the lesson from the wind is very similar to what we heard in the last verse. That first of all, detachment from the environment, but also satisfaction with the bare sustenance of life. And this detachment is in regards to the material sense objects. At the end of the purport, it says, although the wind passes through the most dark and forbidding places, the wind is not frightened or disturbed. Similarly, a devotee of Lord Krishna should never be fearful or anxious, even when in the most difficult situation. One who is attached to materially pleasing forms, tastes, smells, sounds, and touches will also be repelled by the opposite in each category. Thus, finding himself surrounded by innumerable good and bad things, the materialist is constantly disturbed. When the wind blows in many directions at once, the atmosphere becomes agitated. Similarly, if the mind is constantly attracted and repelled by material objects, there will be such mental disturbance that it will be impossible to think of the absolute truth. Therefore, one should learn from the blowing wind the art of moving throughout the material world without attachment. So this is the lesson. We travel in this world and we see good and bad things. And Satyaraj comments that the material objects embody good and bad qualities, according to how we perceive them. So we should see them as non-different, not this is good, this is bad. And like the wind, do not allow them to entangle us in dualistic web. We have to be equal-minded when good and bad dualities come. And so we're all, the material, Maya is always trying to drag our mind that this is good and this is bad, dragging us into accepting and rejecting just by showing us different objects. And then we're attracted or repelled. But we should be like the wind, and we should not become entangled with the good and the bad. As we travel in this material world. So then wind is also in the next verse. The wind is there in verse 41, but it's a different kind of detachment here. That they're again, detachment is a lesson, but it's detachment from different bodies. So we travel, and as we are in this body, then we perceive with our body different things. We have to be detached. And now we travel through different bodies. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world experiencing the various qualities and functions, he is never entangled, just as the wind, which carries various aromas, does not actually mix with them. So in verse 40, detachment from sense objects. In verse 41, detachment from all the different bodies that we've been in. We'll go to the purport about four lines down. So as a Krishna conscious person is always aware that he is different from the temporary body. He experiences the various transformations of the body, such as childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age. But although he experiences the pains, pleasures, qualities, and functions of that body, a Krishna conscious person never thinks that he is the body. He always understands that he is an eternal spirit soul, part and parcel of Lord Krishna. As stated in this verse, Na yujate yogi, he is not entangled. The conclusion is that one should never consider a Krishna conscious person in terms of bodily designation, but should see him as an eternal servitor of the Lord. So detachment from the wind, tolerance from the earth, and service, selfless service from the mountain and the tree. Verse 42. Now we're going to go to the sky, the ether. A thoughtful sage, even while living within a material body, should understand himself to be pure spirit soul. Similarly, one should see that the spirit soul enters within all forms of life, both moving and non-moving, and that the individual souls are thus all-pervading. So this is knowledge in the mode of goodness. According to Bhagavad Gita, you see the one in everybody. The sage should further observe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead as super soul is simultaneously present within all things. Both the individual soul and super soul can be understood by comparing them to the nature of the sky. Although the sky extends everywhere and everything rests within the sky does not mix with anything, nor can it be divided by anything. So here from the sky we learn the presence of soul and super soul within all things. And the lesson is to be unattached and free from contamination, does not mix with anything. So we learn two lessons, that the expansiveness of the soul and super soul, and also how it doesn't mix. It's all pervading, but does not mix. And also how it's undivided. The super soul is undivided. So we'll hear the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in this verse 42. Although the super soul is situated both inside and outside all objects, he remains unattached, just like the sky. This is the lesson to be learned from the sky. So again, detachment, we are learning from the sky, from the wind. This, in spite of remaining within the body, the super soul is all-pervading. By means of his transcendental realization, a yogi should think of the super soul as all-pervading like the sky. Although present within all moving and non-moving living entities, he remains situated in his supreme position. Just as the all-pervading sky is present within a pot and is also outside the pot, the super soul, although present within the material bodies of all living entities, is all-pervading. So, sky. Now the next lesson we are also going to learn from the sky in verse 43. First, we learned that how he's within all things, yet not mixing and undivided, unattached. Now in this verse 43, we'll learn how the soul, this is about the soul, is unchanged and unaffected by all the different things that happen to the body. Although the mighty wind blows clouds and storms across the sky is never implicated or affected by these activities. Similarly, the spirit soul is not actually changed or affected by contact with material nature. Although a living entity enters within a body made of earth, water, and fire, and although he is impelled by the three modes of nature created by eternal time, his eternal spiritual nature is never actually affected. So the lesson here, don't be affected by material circumstances. So now in the purport, we will imagine that we are the sky. What is happening in the sky now? Although the sky appears to be affected by the mighty movements of wind, rain, hurricanes, lightning, and thunder, the sky, being very subtle, is actually not affected, but is rather the background for such visible activities. Okay, so you're the sky, and everything is happening. You're the background. And you're just watching. You're just the background. And within you, all these things are happening. Hurricanes, lightning, thunder, wind, rain. Similarly, although the material body and mind undergo innumerable changes, such as birth and death, happiness and distress, love and hate, the eternal living entity is merely the background for such activities. So we have our thunder and lightning in our life. We have our hurricanes. We have our rain. And that is happiness and distress, love and hate. But we are just the background. The spirit soul, being most subtle, is not actually affected. Only due to misidentification with superficial activities of the body and mind does the soul undergo terrible distress within the material world. So the background is identifying with what's happening in front of it or around it. We are the soul, we are the background, but we are identifying with what's happening to the body which is surrounding us. All the things that are happening to our body. So when we identify with it, then we suffer. So the sky is teaching us not to be affected. We're just the background, like the sky. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya has pointed out that the individual living entity must struggle to revive his divine spiritual qualities. Living entity is part and parcel of the supreme entity called Krishna, and as such, individual soul is also a reservoir of godly qualities. Personality of Godhead, however, automatically manifests these qualities without any hindrance, whereas the conditioned soul must struggle to revive such qualities. Do we have experience of this? That it doesn't come naturally, that we have to struggle for our spiritual life? Thus, although both the personality of Godhead and the personality of the living entity are eternal and transcendental, the personality of Godhead is always supreme. By realizing all this with clear intelligence, the conditioned soul can rise to the spiritual platform. Again, we have a comment here by Satyaraj, verse 43. Oh, yes. He brings in Bhagavad Gita here, 15:8. So consciousness of the soul is compared to air. As the air carries aromas, the soul carries different conceptions of life, but the soul remains unchanged by such conceptions. So he brings in that verse of Bhagavad Gita. And verse 44, the last one we're going to read today, is about water. How water is compared to a saintly person. O King, a saintly person is just like water, because he is free from all contamination, gentle by nature, and by speaking, creates a beautiful vibration like that of flowing water. Just by seeing, touching, or hearing such saintly person, living entity is purified, just as one is cleansed by contact with pure water. Thus a saintly person, just like a holy place, purifies all those who contact him, because he always chants the glories of the Lord. So his vibration is pure like water, his touch, his sight, everything is purifying. And especially, he chants the glories of the Lord. Purport, the words apam mitram, just like water, can also be read as aghan mitram, which means that a saintly person purifies all living entities by accepting them as mitram, or his personal friends, and saves them. In the purport, okay. Saves them from their sinful reactions, aghat. Conditioned living entity falsely identifies with his gross material body and subtle mind, thus falls from the platform of spiritual knowledge. Conditioned living entity is always lusty for material sense gratification, and if he does not acquire it, he becomes angry. Sometimes he's so obsessed with fear of losing his material gratification that he enters a stage approaching madness. A saintly person, however, is like pure water, free from all contamination and capable of purifying all things. Just as pure water is transparent, a saintly person transparently manifests the personality of Godhead within his heart. Such love of Godhead is the reservoir of all happiness. Water makes the most pleasing vibration as it flows in cascades. And similarly, the sound vibration of the Lord's pure devotee, who is saturated with the glories of the Lord, is most charming and beautiful. Thus, by studying the nature of water, one can understand the symptoms of a pure devotee of the Lord. And so here's a nice lesson from Satyaraj. You should be like water, flow with the ups and downs of life. So that's how he's preaching to the devotee. You should flow with the ups and downs of life, just like water. And cleanse everyone who comes in contact with you. So that's another lesson to learn from the water. And we do have a comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this verse 44. And that is, now the lesson to be learned from water is being described. Water is by nature pure and cooling. It is considered to be affectionate toward everyone. Water is sweet. Saintly persons are also sweet by nature, and they purify all living entities by instructing them about devotional service. Saintly persons should behave as the well-wishing friend of everyone, just like water. Devotees purify everyone, just as water purifies everything by its contact. So we're seeing Krishna here. It's Krishna's in Krishna's devotees. And we're seeing Krishna also as all-pervading, as the sky. So in our search for Krishna, by using our intelligence, we are very successful today. So let us review, without looking, what do we learn from the earth?
Tolerance.
From the mountain?
Steadiness and
service. Selfless service. From the tree?
Tolerance and service.
Okay, from the wind? From? Of
environment
and from the bodies. Okay, from the sky. Aloofness. What?
We are the background.
We are not. The hurricane is not. We are not in the hurricane. The hurricane. We are the background. Yes. Yes, the soul. Soul and super soul are inside. Yes, everything, within everything. Soul and super soul. And also, what else do we learn from the sky?
Detachment.
From?
From everything, like...
Everything. Well, that covers everything.
Thunder, clouds.
Thunder, clouds, rain. There's another thing about the soul in relation to the sky.
Expandedness and undivided.
Soul.
And soul is
unchanged.
Unchanged.
The soul is unchanged and unaffected. Okay, from the water.
Sweet
voice. Water is sweet. And
the nature of the saintly person is beautiful vibration.
Yes, from the water. Nature of the saintly person. Always thinking of others. And so we are learning to see Krishna in the elements, earth, water, air, sky. And we will hear about fire and the moon and the sun on the day of the eclipse. If there is an eclipse here, I don't know if it's visible. Do you know if it's visible here?
No.
Not visible here. On the 4th, yeah. Not visible. Okay, so we don't worry about it. Yes, so not visible here. That's good news. Where is it visible anywhere? Or? Okay, somewhere. So are there any questions or comments on these so far, the gurus we have studied? And they haven't given us instructions, but from our intelligence we learn from them how to see Krishna. Any questions or comments on these? Yes.
This water.
Water.
When we hear the Prabhupada singing,
when you hear Prabhupada singing Hare Krishna, it's like the flowing of water. And purifying, yes. Sweet, purifying also, whoever comes in contact. Yeah, you have some information?
I have a question.
Okay, question?
In this verse 32, we read that
and they are correlated with the 24 gurus, elements.
Is
so
it?
Did anybody try to correlate these 24 gurus with 24 elements? The
not
first are obvious.
We can see, yeah, we can
Pingala
fire.
And,
yeah, I don't see the. Well, there's intelligence, mind. Why don't you try? Yeah, that would be an interesting exercise. We've got earth, water, sky. We're going to hear about fire, sun, moon. You can see.
We are just on the verge of the shadow.
Huh?
We are just on the verge of the eclipse shadow, but not touching us.
Okay, good. So
correlate with what?
With the 24 grooves.
Elements.
Elements.
24
elements. Sankhya. That's why he said Sankhya. It's 24 grooves, 24 elements.
It's North Africa,
okay.
Arabia.
No problem.
Eastern Europe.
No eclipse for us.
And it's partial.
A week from Monday. It's a week from Monday. Okay. Good. No, so it won't be next week's class. It's the fourth. It's the fourth, not the. Okay. Uh oh. Yes. So, any other questions or comments on this? The verses for this class. Yes, you can do that. First, list the 24 elements, and then correlate them with the 24 gurus. That would be an interesting exercise to do. So, it's open for anyone who would like to do it. Yeah, to do it. It's your seminar, so maybe. But it's speculation. I mean, yeah, you can't really say.
But the audience of this school, what's the topic? Because they will derive from the tree.
Mm. But actually, there are, there's touch. There is touch, taste,
yes,
and sound. It is there, actually.
Yeah.
Touch, taste, sound.
Yeah.
It's there in the, you learn from
smell.
The deer. Yeah, smell. Those five are there, like the sense objects are there. Touch, taste, sound.
And the aroma is in the mind. It's in the mind.
Which
ones would be the snake, the bangles? Well, the arrow maker probably the intelligence for the focus.
Or consciousness.
Yeah.
Intelligence.
Or maybe consciousness.
Maybe consciousness.
Chitta.
You think chitta?
Functionless attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have the
pingala.
The
pingala. Yeah, that would be hard.
Interior consciousness.
Hmm. Which one?
Pingala. Just some interesting comments on Jiva Goswami. She's got prema and bhava. And I mean, he's putting her way up there, raga. But where that comes in 24 elements.
It's like Buddhi, Maharashtra, that's giving up all
expectations. It looks more like intelligence. Yeah. Intelligence is planning. Yes. Yes?
The
question. Yeah, the insect. First, list the 24 elements and then match them. Yeah, it'd be very interesting. Exercise. I haven't come across it in my study, as far as I can remember. But who knows? Purport might come up if in here. I don't know. I don't think so. Okay, you have a question? Yeah, okay.
If you read this chapter, this study of the Mahabharata, you can see Krishna everywhere.
Yeah.
All the time. So this.
Can you speak louder?
For 24 gurus, is not limited by 24 minutes.
Okay, he's saying that in the previous chapter we heard how the Mahabhagavat can see Krishna everywhere at all time. And so the 24 gurus are on a lower level, you're saying?
No.
That's not limited by 24. It's just, this is what we understand. Why he's saying 24 is because Krishna said this is Sankhya, and there's 24 elements. And that's what their question was just now. That how does it correlate the 24 gurus to the 24 elements? That's why, of course, there's more than 24. There's everything is can be a guru. My intestines are my guru. So there's so many can be your, so many things can be your guru. In fact, everything. It's just like these are examples.
He expands earth into a tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he expands earth into tree and mountain. That's right. So it has to be something besides earth. Right? Has to be two more elements there.
No, there's 28 if you count the expansions.
Oh, if you count the expansions, there's 28.
That isn't
24, okay. So the expansions are just expansion. They're considered earth, mountain and tree. Yes?
That was my question. There are 24 and 28 goals, but it is said somewhere in the purport that he learned four things from his own body.
Mm-hmm. His own body, yeah.
And in your list, I find two points about the body.
Okay.
I'm wondering what are these?
Four points. Okay. Well, yeah, we'll have to look more carefully when we get there.
When I make a list, I never come to 24.
Interesting. So, you can do that exercise, list the 24 elements, and try to match them, both of you, and then we'll see what we come up with.
Okay.
You can try it. 24. He did mention Sankhya, Krishna.
Yeah,
the five senses, the ten senses, the five sense objects.
Yeah.
Sense objects are here. We'll learn that. The five sense objects like we can recognize in this. ten senses. Five sense objects. Mind. Intelligence. False ego. Oh, false ego. Which one's false ego? That would be interesting. The body. Yeah, I was just thinking the body. Identifying with the body. Could be false ego. What you learn from the body. Anyway. Haribo. Any other questions or comments?
Maybe bangles could be the tongue.
No, we got tongue.
Speech. A speech, not a
speech. Speech. Yes.
Why?
Yes.
You're not going to wag your
tongue, yes, because the bangles are teaching to be alone. Because it's teaching that you won't talk nonsense.
That's why she removed the one bangle left.
Yeah.
All others was removed.
So no prajalpa.
Yes.
No nonsense. Yeah, that could be speech. Very good. Just do it. You can figure it out. And then on Monday, bring it on next Monday, and we'll compare your two notes, and maybe you can even have it printed.